Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is now 5:37 a.m. and that is Japan time. So this was an interesting day on Wall Street, but I think what I'd like to start off with is looking at the yen, because the dollar was quite strong in here today, and that has taken a chunk out of gold. It has taken and it is going to have some knock-on effects elsewhere as well. Well, the first, of course, is that the dollar has been trending lower in a pretty persistent manner since the beginning of the year, where it started out the year much closer to 113, and as of just yesterday, it was trading much closer to about 105. But now we have a really quite clear upward dynamic against the yen against for the dollar, and it's pressuring the progression of lower rally highs. Upside follow through tomorrow is going to begin to suggest that this outright bearishness on the dollar has been overdone, and that there is the prospect for additional upside here. Now, there is a knock-on consequence of that, and it's this. When you talk to institutional-type people and you sort of listen to what has been their primary trade for the last 6 months, it has been to short the dollar and to go out and invest in emerging markets. And that has worked beautifully, because emerging markets have been, not only did you get a better valuation, but on top of that, they were doing pretty well. And we have had some pretty profound volatility on Wall Street, and Europe has been performing in a lackluster manner, and I think that that is rather a kind designation, whereas a number of the emerging markets have been doing better. But if those dollars are, if the dollar is now rallying, well, one has to question then how sticky are those investments in emerging markets going to be. One of the things that we're definitely seeing on the stock market is that Wall Street is going through a bout of volatility, and not least because of the overvaluation in the FANG sector, and I'll certainly pull up some of those shares in a moment. When we look at, for example, India, it has been pulling back since February, and obviously this is not where a lot of the speculative positions have been, considering that it has been pulling back rather sharply. But then if we look at, for example, Vietnam, well, Vietnam has been on a storming rally for much of this year. But if the dollar starts rallying, well, then that is also going to perhaps take out some of these indices that are really quite overextended relative to their respective trend means. And when you look at Vietnam, well, one could be forgiven for thinking that it is quite overextended, or that it was simply another tech share. Of course, that is not the case. So when we look at the potential for a dollar rally coming through in here, then I think that this is one of the things that perhaps needs to be borne in mind. Indonesia is right back in the region of the trend mean. This is about where, around the 6,000 level is about where, if it's going to find support, one would be anticipating that would occur. And this, when we look at the Thai index, it has been ranging in a very modest manner. And that is has already unwound about half of the overextension relative to the trend mean. But as long as it's holding the move above the trend mean, then I think people are going to be reasonably sanguine. But then, of course, if the dollar is rallying, well, then that is now confirming that there is at least near-term resistance in the region of the upper side of the range for gold, and it has pulled back in a dynamic manner, which rather suggests that we are going to come back down and test the lower side of this range. When we look at silver, then we're presented with a pretty similar story. Obviously, silver has not rallied to nearly the extent that gold had done, and it has not yet pushed back above the trend mean. It was down 27 cents in here today, and that is now taking it back down towards that $16 level as well. Now, when we look at the performance on the stock market, well, a lot of people and a lot of headlines are talking about Amazon and the threat of antitrust. Now, antitrust is really kryptonite in the short term, and then obviously shareholders would get the equivalent of a cryptocurrency hard fork. because they would get shares in both the resulting companies. And of course, Amazon has got a number of companies. But perhaps the more important point is that the trend mean is at give or take 1200, and the peak back on the 16th was, and which feels like an awfully long time ago, but is really only last week, then, or 2 weeks ago, the peak was at 1617. So there is, not to put too fine a point on it, all there was almost $400 of fat in the price, and now we've seen a $200 pullback, and it is bouncing off the $1400 level in here today. But to think that it is going to simply go sideways and allow that trend mean to catch up with it is perhaps the best possible scenario. It could just as easily pull back another $200. And that's on the whiff of antitrust. If, in fact, antitrust were to become a much more pressing condition, well, then Amazon would be coming down much harder than that, for one simple reason, and it is that they make most of their profits out of their web services business, and that helps to fund what is in fact a loss-making business for the vast majority of the time in the rest of its market. So what happens with antitrust for Amazon is a significant issue, and it is rather the kryptonite for internationally oriented businesses. If we think about what the natural progression of capitalism is, it's towards consolidation. And we have had rather profound consolidation over the course of the last 20 years, where the big companies have got progressively larger. But the natural outcome of that consolidation is antitrust. It's when companies get so big and so powerful and so all-encompassing that they dominate not just their particular niche, but the wider economy as well, well then that is when the forces start to mount against them. So I think that with a populist bent now towards public policy, that is something that we need to bear in mind, that when companies get to very, very dominant positions, that eventually that does become a risk. It's been a risk for years. This has never been something that has not been off the radar. But if there is the potential that the Trump administration is pursuing this kind of a set of policies, then obviously it is not great news for the targets of them in the short term. Over the medium to longer term, then investors tend to get to way different parts of the business, and it can actually turn out to be rather good news, considering that they all end up with different managers and they all have a profit ambition. So it isn't entirely bad news, but nonetheless, in the short term, it's not particularly beneficial for the share. Now, two of the biggest risks in the stock market at the moment are Tesla and Netflix. And Tesla has broken below the $300 level. That is where an awful lot of open interest on short positions was sitting, and it's now down to about $257. Well, this is a very dynamic breakdown from what had been a clearly defined range. Ranges are explosions waiting to happen. They can explode both up and down, and on this occasion it was down. So we also know that Tesla doesn't make any money, and it is a very substantial company that it might well in fact succeed against all the odds and become a mass market producer of cars, but that is an incredibly competitive business, and there are other companies out there in the world that are simply better at it. The one obvious beautiful success that Tesla has had has been to make electric cars desirable and sexy, and that has ignited massive competition within the sector. People are more excited about cars now than they have been for years, and for car manufacturers that is really very good news if they can get them the kinds of products they want. But Tesla is a B- rated credit, and when something like that breaks down in such a dynamic manner, then we need to start paying attention to the high yield sector generally, and the junk bond ETF. And I think it is worth highlighting just how large the the ETF is. It's 8.87 billion. Well, it's not a bullish pattern. It has broken down. There is a clear downward bias to trading. It has paused around this 35.50 area, but it has got a fair amount of work to do to even begin to question that this isn't a distributive chart pattern generally. Then the spread that I keep a close eye on is the Barclays, or what's called the Barcap High Yield Spread Index. It is now back above the trend mean. It is testing the upper side of its over a year long range, and it is looking more likely than not that it is going to start trending higher. Well, when high yield spreads start to trend higher, like they did back in 2014, well, then it gave way to a much more volatile, difficult environment for the stock market in 2015 and halfway through, well, really until the beginning of 2016. And we're already in a more volatile, choppy environment for the stock market. Perhaps it is also worth looking at Netflix, because it isn't something that a lot of people have been writing about with regard to risk. Tesla, on the other hand, tends to have much more of a polarizing effect. That polarizing effect is also representative of the fact that Tesla has spent most of its time ranging for a year. And when something's been ranging for a year, it gives ample potential for people to come up with both bullish and bearish scenarios. It's been very hard to be outright and vociferously bearish about Netflix because it has only been going up for the last 3 months. But it is trading on a nosebleed multiple. And when we look at the price action that we've had this week, then a reversion back to the mean looks like the scenario that is most likely, and the trend mean is currently more than $60 below the price at the present moment. So there is a significant potential for additional consolidation in Netflix price, and that's assuming that this isn't that this hasn't been a clear acceleration and a blowout top, and that the bull market isn't over. And that is a sig that is a significant risk that Netflix has got a PE in the order of 214 on an historic basis and 104 on a forward basis, which means that investors are pretty much anticipating that they're going to double their earnings. Well, they might, but Netflix has been spending a pile of money to invest internationally, and that is not a that isn't something that comes easy. And the reality is that it has rallied very, very quickly. So even in a benign scenario, there is the potential for additional downside. When we look at the kind of cyclical sectors that generally tend to do better in a mature market, well, then biotech is one of those, and it is right now in the region of the trend mean, and it had three of the larger advances on the Nasdaq in here today. Well, then the other one is mining, because generally speaking, maturing phases tend to result in economic growth, and the mining sector is now also right back in the region of the trend mean. The other one that is perhaps starting to get people talking now is the banking sector, because banks have been pulling back rather sharply. They're right in the region of the trend mean as well, and they haven't quite held the impressive bounce that were they were putting in earlier yesterday. What we're starting to see is that LIBOR rates are moving higher, and there is a lot of questioning as to exactly why that is indeed occurring. And we can go around and look at the rationalizations. One of them, of course, is that there has been a massive change to the USA's tax structure, and most particularly how they treat their or the foreign earnings of their companies. Well, that is certainly going to have an impact on funding costs. But the much more important, I think, conclusion is that LIBOR rates are going up, And that has a knock-on effect for the cost of funding on the short term for domestic corporations. It represents a significant additional cost. Quite what exactly the reason is of secondary importance. The very clear fact is that we are starting to get some tightness in the money markets. It is not at crisis levels, and we're still quite a ways away from that, but it is rising, and there is really no indication that it has stopped rising. So if that's the case, then we give the benefit of the doubt to the upside, but it also points towards a growing headwind. And I think that when we think about it in those terms and we start to marry up the move in the high yield sector with that, then that's an important designation that we're starting to see some tightness coming through into the bond markets. Now, when we look at the 10-year, the yield is now at 2.78%. So it has come back below that 2.8% level, but not in a dynamic way. And it's been drifting lower over the course of the last 6 weeks. Now, the yield did race to get up towards that 3% level, and it is coming back down much slower than it rose. So I think that this is something that we also need to bear in mind, that there is ample potential here because of the more volatile environment that we have in stocks, that bonds can rally. But there isn't a great deal of clear bullish story behind it, for the simple reason that we know there's such a large amount of additional supply coming back into the market, which is very different to what we've had previously. Because the market where buy the dip worked so profoundly well for much of the last 35 years has been bonds. Every time bond prices pulled back, if you bought them, you made money. And now people are coming around to the notion that they are a short the rallies market. Well, if it's a short the rallies market, then we're in for more volatility. And if we have short-term potential for additional upside, then that's likely to be a shorting opportunity. And as people come to that realization, then I think they are beginning to doubt whether they should be jumping in with both feet into the bond markets at this stage. Now, when we look at what's going on in Japan, because the Nikkei has been pulling back in line with what's been going on in Europe, but it has bounced from above this 20,000 level, and it is now testing the region of the trend mean. And if the yen weakens further, then that's likely to act as a significant tailwind for the nominal prices on the Japanese market. Personally, I want to be long Japan, because I do think that we are moving back back towards an inflationary environment. And I'm rather heartened that the second section has so far continued to hold the region of the trend mean as well, and has bounced from above this 7,000 level. So I think these are rather promising sets of circumstances, and I think that if the yen does continue to decline, then I'll be opening a long position in the Nikkei. Now, when we look at the European markets, well, if the dollar is strengthening, then that will remove something of a headwind for the European markets. But they really need it. This has been a rather profound period of underperformance, and the Euro stocks is just about holding the region of the lows from back in September, and the lower side of this range evidence since the beginning of February. And it has got to do more than simply firm from this area. A short-term trader would be looking at this and saying, well, there is the prospect that the downside break is going to fail, and that could take us back up towards 385. But that's not really much of a rally, considering that it's nearly a 400-point index. And it really does have a lot of work to do to get it back above the trend mean. One of the things that my 10-year-old daughter loves about coming to Japan is the opportunity to go out shopping for things that are called squishies, which to Anyone with a few gray hairs probably means a stress ball, but in a cute and cuddly fashion. And one of the buying tactics for squishies is to time how slow rising they are. I'm rather reminded of squishies when I look at the European markets, and indeed increasingly on Wall Street, because they're starting to look slow rising. That they are pulling back in a much more they're pulling back in a dynamic manner, and then they are rather struggling to recoup their losses. We have had two really quite accelerated declines on Wall Street over the course of the last 2 months, and that was a big downward dynamic we saw yesterday. And so far, when you look today, the bounce has not been impressive, and with the dollar rallying. And a significant amount of S&P 500 earnings being from overseas, that's not particularly bullish news. So I think we are in for a more volatile environment. I think that I think the most likely scenario is ranging. It's probably going to be volatile ranging, and the VIX index is steadying from the region of the trend mean. It is back above 20. And there is potential for a more volatile environment. And I think that we have a pretty good analog for what that can look like from back in 2015 and 2016. We had a similar spike higher up towards 50. It pulled back pretty sharply after that, but then we went through an additional 6 months of volatile ranging on the VIX index itself. And I think that that is perhaps the most likely scenario. From what we can see right now, but we have to be alert to the potential that trouble in some of the darlings of the stock market doesn't do well. It really is not great news for sentiment, and they do represent significant weightings in ETFs. And perhaps the most I think the conclusion that ETF investors have not yet arrived at, but it is inevitable, is that ETFs are momentum strategies. That if you have an index that is market cap weighted and it is, has been doing well for a long time, then what necessarily happens is that the because of the fact that capitalism trends towards consolidation, and because bigger companies tend to get bigger again, then you end up with a small number of big companies that dominate the index. And if you're an ETF investor, well, that's what you end up owning. Well, it's only really when those big companies start to roll over that ETF investors are likely to start to encounter profit erosion and begin to come to the realization that what they're actually engaged in is a massive momentum strategy rather than simply buying the market and forget about it, or engaging in a value proposition. What they've been doing is engaging in momentum, which for a lot of people is equivalent to gross speculation. So if indeed we get to that kind of situation, then ETFs represent an awfully large pool of supply in this market. And that is something that may not manifest itself as a big problem right away, but it is something that we need to bear in mind, because if we do see some of the really big FANG companies, and I'm not so much talking about Tesla or Netflix, because they are large companies, but they are also highly risky companies. But I'm thinking more like things like Google and Apple and Amazon. Google spent some time below $1,000 today. Now, it was able to push back above it, but this is a larger reaction than we've seen in a decade for Google. And it really does need to hold that $1,000 level if the trend is going to remain or to retain any semblance of consistency. And now, a point that I'd been raising earlier in the year was about Apple. And if we look at the 10-year history of Apple, it is prone to big pullbacks, and it generally tends to lose consistency at the penultimate high. That's exactly what it did in 2012. It accelerated up to a new high, pulled back sharply, then went briefly to a new high and failed. It did exactly the same thing in 2015. Now, we have had much more of a rangy loss of momentum environment, but that was a big pullback that we saw in February, and then it moved on to a new high and failed. And we know what big pullbacks look like on Apple, and generally speaking, they've been buying opportunities. What it does suggest is that potentially we are in for a bigger pullback in Apple, and that is still the biggest company in the world. Now, quite whether it will remain the case with this relative comparison between Google and Apple and Amazon is open to question, but there is certainly a potential for a somewhat larger pullback in Apple to unwind what has been a really very impressive advance up since 2016 and the release of the iPhone X, where you have Chinese companies now that are producing a very similar model for half the price. That there are, it isn't as if Apple doesn't have risks, but it is a luxury brand within the consumer electronics sector, and it has an army of very loyal followers who will buy what just about whatever it produces. So, and I don't think that that's easily replicable by other companies. Therefore, I don't think that this is a big top for Apple, but it is looking like a medium-term peak at least, with the potential that we could have a somewhat larger pullback, which have classically been the best opportunities to initiate long positions. So there is definitely we're still in a corrective phase on stock markets, and it is, I think, a brave person who would conclude that it is over. And most particularly then when we look at what's going on in Facebook, there are definitely going to be some people who are looking at the pullback and thinking, well, every time it's pulled back before, it's been a buy. But that would be to ignore the fact that this is a massive loss of uptrend consistency. And it is now trading way below the trend mean, and that one would then, I think, have to start looking at value propositions for when one would think when it is going to be good value again, because not now does it look like a trend in motion any longer, but rather it looks like a breakdown from it looks like a type 2 massive reaction against the prevailing trend. The most likely scenario is we are going to get some ranging, but then the very big question is the extent to which it is going to be able to sustain a move back above the trend mean. Definitely we are still in a more risky environment, and I think with that, I will wish all the best to all of you.